The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 408. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. We need to talk a little bit about the upcoming schedule for this podcast, as I have one more episode to broadcast for this year. And that's going to happen on December 14th, and then I'm going to take a couple weeks off to spend the holidays with my family in Rhode Island. And so I just wanted to give you a little heads up about that. I will return the first Thursday in January with a brand new episode. And so I thought I owed it to you all to give you the little heads up about the change in the schedule. And you know what? Let's talk about the penultimate episode for 2023 of the PVD Cast, this one right here featuring my guest, indie comic book creator, Devin R. Scott. Now, how I met Devin is a little bit of a peculiar story. As some people know who listen to this podcast, I help book the panels for the Monroe Pop Fest over the last couple of years. And I always do a panel called the Indie Comics Creator Circle. I'm usually joined by three or four indie comic book creators for the panel, and we talk about the trials and tribulations of being an independent comic book creator. And so I reached out to Devin. He immediately got back to me and said that he would love to be part of the panel. But he was such a cool dude and so down to earth, and he's got some cool projects. Magni the Mighty, which is a mythological tale, which I would have to think back to a couple of years ago, since I've seen a mythological comic at a comic book convention. He's also got another one called Magnus. We're going to talk a little bit about his start in the business and how he got started writing comic books and editing comic books. It's going to be a great episode, but before we get to my conversation with Devin, I need to thank once again the best sponsor a podcast could have, and of course I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they've got comics from every era, whether you're talking the golden, silver, bronze, the modern age. They've got graphic novels. They've got tons of back issues, like hundreds and hundreds of boxes of back issues. Of course, they have single issues. They have a great pull system. They are a world-class comic book store. Let's just leave it at that. A world class comic book store. So check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, or check them out on Facebook at WG Comics, just in case you're curious about the store, but you don't live anywhere near Ohio. I say it all the time, and I mean it. I really thank Jeff and all the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics for being a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Devin R. Scott. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon, I'm sitting down with a man that I met at Monroe Pop Fest this past year, Mr. Devin R. Scott. Devin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fabulous, John. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Can't complain. Let's start off real quick talking about where we met. We met in Monroe at the Pop Fest this year. I actually reached out to you via Instagram to talk about maybe being on the Independent Comics Creators Circle, that panel. of which you join. What were your thoughts on this year's show?
For somebody that has been to the show at least once or twice before this one, I think I've missed previous years in recent. It was pretty good. I think there are a couple of things that could have been changed, obviously. Obviously, they changed the biggest one, which was the name. So Pop Fest, and they returned to the Comic-Con label that they previously had. I think that was the biggest thing in regards to the turnout. Other than that, I thought, it was a pretty solid show. I got to be around some really cool, pop culture folks. I can never remember the names, but I know what their roles were. So the lady, Stephanie, whatever.
Oh, yeah. It's a very bizarre last name. I would not be able to say it and get it correct. So I know who you're talking about, though.
She voiced, Goku and Gohan and all of them from Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, which big part of my childhood. You had the original Michael Myers sitting like right to the right of me somewhere. There was a bunch of Power Rangers that I really wish I could have met, but I just did not have the time. But overall, it was a solid show. I'm definitely going back next year, so that way, I can keep spreading the love of comic books and, getting folks introduced to something that's not the norm.
I thought I read somewhere, looking over my notes yesterday, did you get to meet Al Milgrom?
I did. That was the biggest of my highlights for the show, actually. So meeting Al was pretty cool.
I was going to say, he's a legend in the field, and if you think about all of the stuff he's worked on, it's like the who's who of the comic book world.
Oh, no doubt. Al has done like a lot of different things that I enjoy. I think he had a small stint on Justice League, if I'm correct. He did the Avengers on and off in the 80s. He specifically wrote one of my favorite teams of Avengers, essentially. It had like She-Hulk, Black Knight, Cersei, Hercules, a bunch of other stuff like that, right before issue 300 came out. So he was on the title as a writer and an artist, I believe, for a good at least 20 issues, if I had to guess. I could look it up because I have, the biggest Avengers collection for somebody my age. But whatever, that's not important. But no, he was a cool guy to talk to. I literally could not pry myself from his table. So when people were looking for me, my wife would point all the way down to the end of the aisle, and you see me over there just gushing to Al, and I gave him a copy of Magni the Mighty. And we just really chopped up really well. Finally got my picture for my, creator scrapbook. So whenever I meet somebody that I enjoy, I usually add them to a scrapbook, which is all digital for the moment. I'll convert once I get a little bit more photos. I'll put where I met them and so on and so forth. But he's one of the two biggest creators that I want to meet this year. Earlier in the year at Fantasticon in Toledo, I met Ron Mars, and we got to speak for a little bit. Unfortunately, both of us were out of business cards, so we couldn't really do much in terms of handing out business cards. So next time I'll catch him, I'll make sure to get him one of those.
Okay. And let me just tell you right now, this is an audio only podcast, but your business cards are pretty sweet. They are like the old school Marvel trading cards. I dig that, man. How'd you come up with that idea?
So crazy enough is I saw a bunch of different people with them that I knew. So I'm like, well, who did y'all business cards? So, they pointed me in the direction of a gentleman who does them. And he actually just opened up another round of these business cards recently on Twitter. So I actually got a hold of him. And I had to ask him, like, hey, could you, do one for me? And, he usually asks you what type of stuff you'd like to see on it, and he can come play around with it. I'm like, well, I'm big on, like, Norse mythology and, like, all that. And everybody has a specific theme. So, like, I saw a gentleman who was supposed to be, like, Nightcrawler, or another person, who could, say, be, like, Aquaman or something else. And I'm like, all right, well, I want something Norse, so throw that in there. And I just gave him the little bio on the back, and he filled the rest in, and it came out wonderfully. And now I got 400 of them left, so trying to get them all out.
And you know what? I like the back where it's got all your stats, you know, where you have, to me, the one that made me chuckle the most is the, you know, when you look at your skill set, you know, creative passions is 7, resting is 1 or 2, email response time, comic book collecting, goofiness, that's pretty awesome. That I like that. That's ingenious.
Oh, most definitely. You know, I try to do something that corresponded with who I am as an individual, compared to, say, my peers who also have these cards. You know, everybody has a specialty or some type of quirk. And, you know, I wanted that to be reflected heavily with my bio and, you know, my stats. So that, you know, rest and being a 1 or 2 is true because I don't get much sleep. And when I do, you know, I overdo it. And it's, you know, it's very few and far between, but I'm mostly active most of the day. So it can get rough.
Well, you are the man behind Epic Fantasy Studios. And as I did my research, one of the things you mentioned in one of your monthly posts on your Substack was that your starting in comics wasn't a very smooth road. Am I correct on that?
That is very correct.
Well, can you tell the listeners a little bit about your background and how you got in and the ups and downs that you faced?
So being someone that was primarily a reader first, but had writing passions, you know, as a child, I, you know, was inspired by comics to write like novels. I wanted to be a novelist at first, you know, and eventually work my way into comics because I assumed that, you know, people could just jump into it whenever, because I've seen all sorts of people do it. You know, JMS, who did one of the best runs of Thor, in my opinion, like, at least for my youth. For those who don't know who JMS is, that's J. Michael Straczynski. He was a novelist. Mm-hmm. So, you know, seeing folks like that, I'm like, well, I can get into it anytime. Even Stephen King did comic books. He did The Gunslinger from, what was that book? The Dark Tower.
Yep, Dark Tower.
Series. So it's like, all right, well, I can get into it anytime. People just happen to fall into comics, so whatever, no big deal. So when the novel thing didn't really take off, that was more of a me thing. I just, you know, I don't have too much pride or did not have too much pride in myself as a creator. So I'm like, whatever, that's not going to work. Well, you know, over the years, I'm like, I want to still do comics. I want to figure out how to do that. So on January 1st, 2019, I made it my business to start doing comics. My wife really encouraged me to do that. And I'm like, all right, well, I can do it. So I took that entire year to essentially figure out how I was going to, you know, learn how to script and how the industry works with, you know, the rest of the pieces of the puzzle that you need to make a book. And along the way, I did get had for my skills, because there were a bunch of, you know, open calls for, say, writers or whatever, just starting out for opportunities. And I'm like, all right, well, cool. Maybe this will be something easy, something low paying, whatever. Well, I did the work, and then they ran off with the work. And I'm pretty sure, coincidentally enough, at least recently, I saw something that I'm pretty sure I wrote floating around there, but something is different about it, and I couldn't tell you what's different, because I don't know where or if this script for that work still exists, because I just, you know, I push all the old material to the side nowadays. But no, and from there, I'm like, well, no more of that. I'm not doing that. So no more, you know, exposure work, as they call it in the industry. A lot of people get had on, you know, working for exposure because they think it's a good way to get people exposed to their work. It is not. Do not work for free. And if you work for free, you're doing it essentially for yourself. Work for yourself because that's free. But otherwise, I kept doing what I was doing. I got better at what I was doing. I got my first real paid opportunity in July of 2020, right after my birthday, coincidentally. A gentleman called me up and was like, hey, you know, I'll pay you $20 a page, it was at the time, for, you know, a 20-page book. So I think that was like $400 for my first project. It took me 3 months to do it because I just wasn't hitting the mark. I was close, the editor I work with, Jason Snyder, who was my eventual mentor and got me into editing, whether he truly knows that or not. And I finally nailed it down. And from there, I was like, hey, I want to do editing. So I had two skills now. I could write and I could edit. And from there, I've basically flourished. I've moved into spots where people normally don't get to. When you first start out, you know, I'll be hitting 5 years on January 1st of the new year of doing all of this. So in 5 years, most people don't get to do as much or get paid as much as I have. And it just continually grows and grows. I've made friends with all sorts of pros that have done books that some of you listening may idolize, you know, especially Joshua Dysart. He's the man. I got to catch up with him. But it's just, don't stop because you don't, you know, think you're good enough. You're plenty good enough. Just keep the momentum and, you know, practice, practice, practice. If you don't practice, you're not going to get better. I practice literally every day, even if I write, say, one or two pages. It's better than no pages.
In essence, what you're saying is that you have to be aware of what you're doing out there, but you need to also just expose yourself to as much practice as you can get. And would it be safe to say, to use a sports analogy, it's more of a marathon rather than a sprint?
Very much so. You know, those people that think this is just something that comes easy and like, you know, you're going to get paid crazy money. No, that's a, you know, a facade. Don't believe in things like that. This is something that takes a very long time for a lot of people to even find any success. I see a lot of people that when I started, they were hitting it big, in my opinion. And now there's a lot of people leaving because they were more worried about the sprint aspect instead of the marathon aspect and not being able to utilize the things around them. So, you know, there's a lot of free things that can help you. And a lot of people, a lot of creators especially, are not business minded, unfortunately. Learn business. This will aid you in that marathon mentality, because if you can figure out how to do business related stuff, because this is a business, if you want it to be a career, you have treated as such, then you need to learn business. I don't care if you go to school for it, you can read a Four Dummies book if they still make those for it. Just try to figure it out.
That's a very valid question, Devin. I don't know if they still make those or not. I'm not sure.
I haven't seen one since 2008 when my dad was buying them just because they were cheap at the time.
Well, anyways, man, I'll tell you what, that's a blast from the past. But let's talk about your big project, Magni the Mighty. You kind of mentioned it in your explanation of how you got into the biz and whatnot. Can you give a quick summary of the book?
So Magni the Mighty is a fantasy book, which is set in Norse mythology influences. You know, follows Magni and Modi, the two sons of Thor, in a post Ragnarok world. So basically everybody, or at least most of everybody, you know, that they knew are gone. And they have to find a way to navigate this world in a new way while also embracing destinies that are slowly, or at least for them, quickly unfolding. So it's my baby. It's a project that I've had in my mind for years. A lot of the books that I write are basically what other people or other publishers are not doing with characters. And quite frankly, I'm tired of seeing Thor with no kids over at Marvel with their no children policy. But it was such a honor to finally do this and then have the book come out and people really receive it very well. You know, I didn't expect a Norse mythology book that was very similar to, you know, Thor at Marvel. Granted, I lean more into the mythology side than, you know, the superhero stuff, which I guess you can take it or leave it with that. But it, in essence, you know, there's a lot of relatable instances from my life that are also in this book, but we just put the mythology and fantasy overtones over that. So, you know, you'll see Magni has depression, you know, a bunch of other things. And, you know, we get into that, but I just want people to experience it for themselves and understand why I did what I did with the series.
When I read the copy that I purchased, which I believe is the kind of the first issue, and then is it a preview as well? I can't remember.
So the issue that you got, unfortunately, is a double issue. So you get the one shot that starts the series, which was 24 pages, and then you get the issue one of that same series with that book. So that's 30 pages, and it comes with a – well, it's 24 pages for the main story and 6 pages of a backup. So you get, you know, 54 pages total in that book. So you don't have to essentially, you didn't have to wait to see, say, when issue one was going to come out, because you got issue one with you already. You got two books in one, which once we get to the what I'm doing next portion, I'll let on about Magni a little bit more.
Okay, you got it. But one of the things that when I read the book that I took away from it is you talk about this idea of personal themes. I took away... The big one I took away from was the idea of the sibling rivalry. It seemed that there was that tried and true thing that happens to all of us. You know, I'm a little brother. I was just going to ask, are you a little brother or an older brother that had that same situation? And that's what inspired that storyline?
I'm an older brother. I'm one of two. So me and my younger brother are 3 years apart in age. So there's... Granted, that's not a crazy age gap, but, you know, how my mentality is to how he is, you know, there's always and is still competition between the two of us in some facets. You know, even as adults, and I think I'm just bitter because he's over 6 feet tall. I'm not even 6 foot. He's, you know, he's tall. And I wish I was tall, but no, we had a big rivalry as children. You know, everything we did, one of us had to be the better one at it, and you know, this and that. And it's like, why not put that in the book? It makes sense because, you know, Magni and Modi, they have this same relationship, but you know, it's slightly different because they're gods. You know, they're not just, you know, mortal children having a squabble. They get to live pretty much for a very long time. And to see how their personal relationship is, which, you know, there's always going to be some rivalries there. So with, say, for instance, Modi taking up the duties of, you know, King of Asgard stuff, that in itself, all right, well, I one up to you. I know you can't do it. I'd rather do this anyway. You aren't going to do it. And if you did do it, you're not going to do it well. Same with me. My brother... probably still to this day won't do certain things, and it's like, well, I'll do it, you're not gonna do it. So, you know, it's a big reflection on my life as a, you know, older sibling, and the decisions that I make essentially set the tones for how my brother is in life. Essentially, I ain't gonna lie, like, I kind of raised my brother when my parents weren't at home. Neither of my parents were home, we had stuff to do, we was gonna go do it, taking them with me everywhere. And, you know, that highly reflects in how he is as an adult now and how I am with my own child as an adult. So, you know, I can see the dichotomy of, you know, going from an older brother with this rivalry with my brother and now having a child that I have to essentially rein in. And it's a crazy dynamic, but, you know, it does reflect in the material, as you mentioned before.
So you're a fan of mythology, you said it. So did you have to do much research to make sure everything was exact the way it should be? Or did you say, well, you know, I got a little creative license here that I could kind of play a little bit loose maybe with some of these characters?
So I'd say it was about half and half. Granted, you know, mythology has always been my thing. You know, I've owned and read many mythology books. You know, you can pretty much search up information anywhere. But there was very little information in the Norse poetic Eddas for Magni and Modi. Like, it says they survive Ragnarok, but it don't really say what they do. So I'm like, well, what are we going to do about that? So I just kind of, I took that concept of them surviving because I knew I wanted this to work. in a way that, you know, didn't match another property, so to speak. And I wanted it to be unique. So I took those two surviving, I placed them in the situation, which is, you know, post-Ragnarok environment. And then from there, the trials and tribulations that they will be facing were kind of unique because I wanted it to be something that you've kind of seen before in other books, but at the same time, you know, you have these unique new circumstances, like rebuilding upon what was just lost, essentially. You know, how do you go about that? How do you protect folks to keep this thing from happening again? You know, and quite frankly, it was a lot of fun doing the research and just adding other Norse mythological, goodness gracious, can't talk, mythology figures from, you know, these same instances into the book. You know, I think I got Skadi, which is another Norse mythology figure who I kind of altered. Balder is a big one, which is, you know, it's been very fun to play with. And as we continue the story, you'll see why I picked Balder for this specific purpose. And then just, it's just been all out mayhem. And I just love it. You know, I love the research. I'm actually writing another mythology book, or it's almost done rather. And it's been fun doing stuff for that too. So I'm hoping folks will like that as much as they like Magni.
I believe that I read that there's a second issue coming out for Magni the Mighty. Is that correct?
That is correct. It'll be coming out in the fall of 2024, issue 2, which will be 30 pages long. This will be standing on its own this time, just due to the nature of that double issue. You know, and the cost of production, I assume, is the real reason for this. But despite all that, you know, we get into Balder, why he's here, and what that means for Magni and the rest of the, you know, nine realms. So it's going to be fun. I had a great time putting it together. So
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Devin for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They've got a ton of stuff that you need to check out. If you're in the Central Ohio area, you need to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com, and they're very active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Well, let's talk about another project that was at your table in Monroe, Magnus. And I want to just start off real quickly before you give us a summary, Devin, to say that I really liked the art for this book. There was not that there's anything wrong with Magni or anything along those lines. It just, for some reason, it clicked with me. It just kind of was reminiscent of those kind of early 90s Image books, which I kind of dug. You know, the artwork was gorgeous and that. So, but with that aside, let's talk a little bit about what the tale is behind Magnus.
So, funny enough, I was paid. That was one of my first, like, and longest paid projects to do for the publisher Wiseacre Comics. Owner of that company approached me with an idea, basically a young Chicagoan whose story is very much like that of Invincible. If you guys, you know, are listening, if you watch or read Invincible, it has a lot of stuff like that. So you get the intergalactic portions and then, you know, Black Panther. So you get sort of that vibe as far as the mythology. So Black Panther, in essence, and all Black Panthers have, you know, the heart-shaped herb they have to ingest. They have to be blessed by Bast, which is one of the gods that essentially are worshipped in Wakanda. You know, they're Yoruba gods, if I'm correct. Really doesn't matter too much, but it does. Well, we changed that a little bit. So we took those influences, put the character, you know, young adult in Chicago, and basically threw all the stuff at him. So, you know, his uncle from this crazy alien-ish yet, you know, god-like planet Nulion in a whole nother part of the universe just comes looking for him to, you know, tell them, like, look, people are coming for you. You need to run. We got to get you out of here. Things unfold to where Magnus's latent abilities emerge. And then from there, it's just going to get crazier. But for the most part, Magnus is and has been a joy to write because it's not the same, like, superhero-y type books that you normally would get. And it's actually something much deeper than it seems on the surface. And coincidentally, issue 4 is up on Kickstarter right now. We funded in, like, what, 72 hours. Good. So it's been a trip. And speaking on art, Bruno Abdias, a cool Brazilian artist, he did win the Top Cow Talent Hunt this year. And he just got put on Cyborg number 6 at DC this past month as well. So to see him and his style, which is very much reminiscent of the, you know, Image style in the early 90s, that's who he held up to a high standard. And I see it reflects very well in his work. You know, all the projects that he does, it reflects very well. And I see why he was picked up by those that, you know, picked him up. So Top Cow got him. DC has him. Magnus number 4 is his last issue, but we have a new artist after this issue who is pretty much, I'm not going to say they're on the same level, but between Bruno and our new artist, you won't notice too much of a difference.
I was just going to ask you that. I'm glad you made that statement because I can imagine it's got to be very, very challenging if you wanted to go that route. I imagine as a creator of a comic that you could just say, hey, you know, life happens and, you know, our artist or our writer, whoever's moving on up, so to speak, you know, and try to fill that void or try to find somebody that has a similar style. So I imagine that had to be a daunting task.
Oh, yeah. I know. We went through a couple individuals, and I think the individual we particularly chose, his name is Walt Barna. He does some great work. If you've seen or read the book Bitterroot, I would say his art is very comparable to that book. Actually, if you pop over to Kickstarter and see his variant for Magnus number 4, you'll get a feel for what his art would be like for interiors. And that's, I still think that's pretty high level artwork. Granted, you know, Bruno and Walt are two different individuals, two different styles. They come packing quality, and that's all we could ask for.
Speaking of Kickstarter, while doing research, I stumbled across, I believe it's a past campaign, but it was a campaign that had three one shots, all grouped together from various different creators, very different publishers, Granite, Noir, and Endless Hunt. And I have to be honest, Devin, I've never seen this before. And maybe it's out there. Maybe I just haven't been, you know, lucky enough to stumble across it. But I really said to myself, that's an innovative idea to get three different one-shots that maybe you obviously will get at least one, if not all three of them, to be loved by whoever picks them up. So could you talk a little bit about that project? Because you had a hand in Noir, correct?
Correct. That is my latest IP that was inspired by Batwoman. You know, they treated her poorly over at DC, in my opinion. So I was tired of seeing them treat Batwoman so poorly. So I made my own, essentially. You know, Noir is, you know, my love child to things like, you know, how Magni is, to things that were not being done by these publishers. So I did the one shot. It was me, Ben Worrell, Avery Bacon, the colorist, and then Reed Hinckley Barnes is the letterer on that project. I'm just actually, once we get off of this later, I actually have to go finish up a couple pages and then compile a PDF for that. But no, the idea for these three one-shots, though, I was tired of just having to wait to get things out, and I kicked the idea over to one of my most notable peers, Christopher Hudson. And I was like, well, you have any other projects that are done? Because I actually took a couple early editions of Endless Hunt with me to the convention, coincidentally, just to kind of show it off. I don't think it sold more than like one issue, but no, I just needed a way to get more books into more people's hands to maybe, you know, introduce them to these concepts. So that way, if they truly enjoy something more than something else, we can keep kicking these ideas out. So CJ and I agreed to do this. Endless Hunt was pretty much done since, I want to say, March or April. I got it printed in May as a test. So I did a limited run test print of those. And then from there, I was like, all right, what else you have for me? And he had Granite, which, you know, was a superhero book that I forgot that I edited for him. And he was like, well, yeah, I had already started work on it. You know, you want to throw that in the campaign? I'm like, all right, get me a finished color, give me a finished cover and like at least 6 pages worth of art. And he did that. So I threw it all into one campaign. I told folks that, all right, this is the biggest campaign yet. We was trying to, you know, hit some monumental figure. I think it originally I had it set at like $8,000. I'm like, nah, that, you know, there's a chance this won't happen. Then I got feedback and they said it really ain't gonna happen because I didn't have enough behind me successfully on my own that equated to being able to make that money in a time frame that I needed it. So I'm like, all right, $6,000 should be it. Like, that's as low as I'm going. Can't go any lower because the work wasn't finished. We had all the pages done. You know, Endless Hunt was the only one done at that time. And, you know, I'm like, all right, well, whatever happens with this, the books are still going to come out. If the campaign failed, I was still going to, you know, have us finish the books on our own time. And then I'd print the books for all of us, which, you know, realistically was only two of us. Our third, he's doing other projects, so I gave him a break this round. But no, Endless Hunt, Noir, and Granite were a success. And crazy enough is, right before we met at the convention, the Kickstarter had ended around the 8th of that month. So I'm like, yeah, that worked out pretty well. Now let's hurry up and go do this, you know, this convention real quick, and then I'm done. I was wiped after that con, and you know, everything worked out well. And now I'm working on my next one. I just got to get this campaign fulfilled, which we're super, super, super close, but you know, had a couple delays.
Well, let's talk about that campaign and that project right now. So hit us up with the details.
So this is like an exclusive for everybody listening because I haven't said anything about it up until now. My next campaign is for a book titled The Lion of Olympus. It is a Greek mythology book that centers around Hercules, but, you know, I use the Roman spelling and name, so it'd be more like Heracles if you say it the right way. And basically, this limited two-issue series, you know, we're launching issue one in 2024, either around or after March. I haven't really decided yet. But no, it follows Heracles. He's basically, you know, mind his own business. Hera, being the person that she is, she's very bitter. She's tired of Zeus's kids just running around, and they ain't her kids. You know, she's a very malicious woman, unfortunately. And, you know, she enlists the aid of another god that you'll see also in the series. And, you know, it's just immaculate. It's going to be a lovely 22-pager. I got two covers back so far. I'm still waiting on one more. The artist's almost done for interiors, and then colors and letters are the last pieces of the puzzle. I'm hoping to have those done around or maybe after the campaign is over with. I'll figure it out as we get closer in time. And that's just the first project to kick off 2024 with.
You want to tell us about the other projects, or are those still being kept close to the vest, so to speak?
I'm going to keep those, you know, a little closer to the vest. But if y'all subscribe to my newsletter, you know, you'll find out a little bit more as we get closer to these, you know, dates and times for when things are coming out. You know about two so far. Both are mythology based. You got Magnet and Mighty number two coming out in the fall, and then you have the Lion of Olympus, Hera's Wrath, number one coming out in early 2024 sometime. So, but everything else that I have is cool.
Oh, and I was going to say, and you can follow you over epicfantasy.substack.com, where you have your all of your information, your newsletter, and everything there. I got to be honest, you're the first person that I've checked out of Substack. I'm not going to lie. I've heard of it, and I don't know why I've never checked one out, but yours is very nice, man. It's clean. It's to the point. There's no clutter. It's right there, man. All the info you need.
And I very much thank you for that. You know, I try to get straight to the point. I do what my wife calls Devin answers. So I give very long-winded answers instead of getting to the point typically. But I think it's a fun way to keep me on track with what I do on Substack. And quite frankly, since Substack was became a thing for comic book creators, at least, you know, when they jump ship to that way, I noticed, and I think I'm only subscribed to one Substack at all, period. Jonathan Hickman's Substack I'm subscribed to because that's my buddy. He has a Substack called Three Worlds, Three Moons. And it's just some of the trippiest, most Hickman-esque comic books that you could ever hope for. I'm an annual subscriber. I love it. I actually, it's one of the recommended Substacks that I recommend from my Substack. So if you subscribe and see Epic Fantasy recommends, I think that's one of the like six that are actually recommended by me, because it's such a wonderful lore filled and many charts as well, because Jonathan loves his charts filled project, and I need other people to read this too. I can't just be the only person reading it.
Okay, last two questions, but before we get to those questions, you're also on X and Instagram at CBDevin95, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Let's get into the last two questions. First one, favorite comic book characters or creators?
Oh, well, just name one. Jonathan Hickman is like one of my favorite creators, like out the gate. Don't even have to explain that. Well, kind of do. And then favorite comic book character would have to be Thor, because you know, I don't count the Avengers as a single character, as a combination of characters. And Thor is always on the Avengers. He hasn't really missed a roster between him and Cap. They haven't missed it. And mm-hmm. I love it.
Okay. Last question. What is your prized possession in your vinyl record collection?
Oh, man. I'd have to, granted, you know, it's prized because it's like super, super special to me personally. But it would be a copy of MF Doom and Mad Lib's hip hop album, Mad Villainy, which I base my entire personality off of in terms of being a comic book creator. If people did not understand that, and I will elaborate real quick. So basically, the whole premise of MF Doom's motif is he's a super villain. You know, he models himself off for Dr. Doom. You know, there's always Dr. Doom samples in all his albums, whatever. Well, basically, the way that he structured the album, not even just in terms of, you know, vocals on his part, but just the beats laid by him and Madlib, they both share production. It's very much, you know, you can tell where there were messy spots, and then they cleaned it up so well that it tells, like, an interesting narrative of their mad villainy, so to speak, because that's the duo's name. So, you know, it's one of my favorite pieces. It's a great project for folks to check out. I literally know the second track off the top of my head, and, you know, I've never heard somebody rap to an accordion ever in my life until that album. So it was pretty cool.
All right, let's run down. I'm going to run it down one more time. Where folks can get in touch with you, epicfantasy.substack.com, X and Instagram, at CBDevin95. And folks, check out what Devin's doing. And thanks, man, for coming on and chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, trust me, it's been a blast. You know, this is like one of the best podcasts I've ever been on.
Thank you.
So, you know, you're very great, you know, host. I would really love to come back on again at some point, you know, when I'm free. I know I have a lot more stuff to knock out before the year's done. So if you want to book me for the beginning of next year or around the time or whatever, Kickstarters, hey, you feel free and I will happily respond.
All right. You got it. You got it, man. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Devin R. Scott, talking about his cool comic book projects that he has going on. And please check him out. You know, as you heard, he's got some unique tales to tell. Check him out if you get the chance. And thanks, Devin, once again for coming on the show. I appreciate it so much. All right, now it's time for me to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode of the PVD Cast. First, you can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can also leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for at PVDcast. And if you want, you can also shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is my email address. And if you want to let folks know where they can hear this great podcast, well, there's a bunch of different avenues for that. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and it is the best place to get every single episode of the podcast every Thursday when new episodes drop. But maybe you enjoy those podcasting apps that are on everyone's phone. Guess what? PVDcast is available through those apps as well. All you have to do is go to the search bar of your favorite podcasting outlet, put PVDcast in the search bar. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And when you listen through one of those outlets, please make sure that you rate and review. It helps me out in the algorithm. And don't forget to subscribe, because that will make sure that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. But there's two other ways that you can hear the podcast. First off, you can listen every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page. I do a little live broadcast. That makes it a little bit easier for some folks to find the podcast. But PVDcast is also available through the internet radio station Croc Radio, CROC Radio, out of British Columbia. That's right, I'm invading the Great White North as well. Every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can hear the PVDcast through CROC Radio. So just go to your favorite directory that has all those internet radio stations in them. Click CROC and listen to the PVD Cast and all of the fine shows through Croc Radio. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.